or will Queens continue their royal rule over the Lions? Tune in to CFRC 101.9 FM or CFRC.ca to catch all the bone-crunching action. 2:45 pregame show, 3 p.m. kickoff. We hope to see you there.
Yes, I'd like a bowl of hot alphabet soup.
Hi, my name is Hayden, and I have a new show on CFRC called Alphabet Soup.
A bowl of hot?
Make sure it's hot.
Alphabet Soup is a musical variety show that's live every Tuesday from 10 to 11 a.m.
Make sure it's hot.
Right.
Okay, sir. Coming right up.
Tune in to hear something classic or something fresh. Tuesdays at 10 a.m. on CFRC.
Hey, Charlie, table 26 wants a hot alphabet soup.
This is 101.9 FM CFRC Live Sessions. I'm Paige, your host today, and I'm here with Sadie McFadden. So excited.
Hello.
And we're going to be talking a little bit about your music, your journey to your music, and everything in between. So to start us off, so we're sitting on a very beautiful bench right now. She has a little story she wants to tell us about the bench, because I was hearing it and I was like, oh my gosh, I work here. And so this isn't your first time at CFRC.
No, absolutely not. So I actually used to be the arts coordinator for CFRC, and this was an ugly bench that was sitting in the lounge. And I asked the station manager if I could take it outside and if I could spray paint it, because I was in a spray paint era where I was just spray painting.
Art era.
Yeah.
Arts era.
Yes. I was living in my visual arts era, and this was my medium. And so I took it right outside the building here, and I just spray painted it for like an hour. I put like different layers on it. I wrote CFRC, put a little music note in, put welcome.
For our listeners, it's a wooden bench that's sprayed with white, turquoise, and red and black, mm-hmm. with just like very graffiti looking, which is really cool. That was a great move, because I mean, this bench would have been just crusty before.
It was super crusty.
So how did you go from CFRC arts to now singer-songwriter?
Yeah, so actually I think CFRC had a huge was very, very influential for me, because as the arts coordinator, my job was to talk to all of the different artists in Kingston, like musician, dancer, visual artist, performing art, everything, and to talk about like what was going on. And this was actually during the time of COVID, and so it was really difficult to find you weren't going out to events, right? It was all online events, or a lot of events weren't happening. And so things were slowly starting to open back up. And so every single chance I got to like go to live music, I absolutely took it. And
as did we all,
yeah,
RC.
Right? Yeah.
We're all trying to get that music in.
Yeah, exactly. So it was just, so I started going to all these events, like introducing myself to the artist, being like, oh, I work for CFRC. It like give them my card or whatever, saying like, please come into the station. I'd love to like chat with you or whatever. Because I didn't have enough events. So I was just like, I guess I'll just start interviewing whoever I feel like interviewing.
Kingston Live is honestly the best for that.
Yes.
I can see everything going on. But there's also so many resources for anyone that has the same taste that wants to see all of the live events, which we will be talking about. Stay tuned in, because we'll be talking about an event with Sadie a little bit later.
Yes. So I was at Musiki, and I met my soon-to-be bandmate Josiah there. And then I joined Hinterwood, and I feel like I really got pushed into the scene with Hinterwood. And then that project ended up working out, but I decided that I was just going to go off and do it on my own, because I had the ability to, and it's something that I've always wanted to do since I was a little girl. But I don't think I ever had I think it was really great to have like someone else say to me that they thought I was good enough to be on stage. And so once I had someone else say like, wow, like you're actually good at this, I was like, oh, maybe I should start believing what other people say.
Totally. So what was the best part about joining the music scene in Kingston?
Yeah, I think one of the best parts was how quickly I was accepted into it.
It is very welcoming.
Mm-hmm, like how quickly I was accepted into it, but also at the same portion, like I just had like this refound confidence in in like myself and in my music. And I just had this like rush of creativity and this ability to collaborate with so many amazing musicians that live in Kingston.
Which is, I think, the best part, really. There's so much collaboration, so much, like, interwoven. Everyone knows somebody from somewhere, and it's, yeah. like, the greatness about it being a little smaller, like, than Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
So before we listen to you play, which will be in just a couple of minutes, what can you tell me about this first song that you're going to play here today?
Yeah, so the first song is one that I actually just wrote.
Oh, so what's it called? Because I forgot to ask that.
I don't really have a name for it yet, if I'm being honest.
Unknown song.
Unknown.
John Doe song.
I'm working on it.
I don't know what it is.
That's so fair. I think like the whole premise of it is supposed to be like a song for the girlies. So I'm kind of thinking about calling it like for the girlies, but I don't know yet. But theoretically, let's soft name it that. Soft name for the girlies.
Soft launch.
Soft launch. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, so I literally wrote it like last week. And yeah, you wanted to know what was your question again?
No, we got the answer. So it's called Soft Launch for the girlies. That's not actually what it's called. That's in quotes, everybody listening. So yeah, let's give it a listen. And you're listening to 101.9 FM. Stay tuned in for more with Sadie McFadden.
Found someone I thought was great, but again, I'm a rebound. Nice skies don't get over there. Guess I'm back to seeing what's next. And even when a stupid person breaks your heart, the girls will talk about it and you'll create some art. They'll hype you up in the bathroom saying your tits are great, you look so amazing, like Taylor crying at the gym, cause even a baddie's torn up over him. He's just a dude at a grocery store who doesn't have ambition to be anymore. With my friends in a Peter car, to a cottage that ain't that far, and we're listening to Daniel Monathy. You wouldn't know him cause he's so indie.
Thank you. You're back with 101.9 FM. This is CFRC. I'm here with Sadie McFadden. My name's Paige. I'm going to be hosting today. And we just listened to, it's unknown the name of the song right now, but it will be known in the near future. We just got a fresh taste of Sadie McFadden's music. So tell me a little bit about that song, because we were talking a little bit before that it's for the girls, soft launch for the girlies.
Yeah.
So can you explain that a little bit for our audience to understand?
Yeah, for sure. So I feel like it was, I had a little bit of a breakup, but I don't know. We were technically dating, but it was so short that I don't even want to count it, to be honest. But really, I felt like the girls have always really been there for me. And I feel like I write all of these songs about, you know, my love life. And I just was thinking that I wanted to write something for my friends, because they really are, for me, like my chosen family. And they're so, so, so important to me. And I just had this incredible day where we just like went out to like a cottage in the middle of nowhere. And we just kind of like sat in the quiet and just chatted. And it was just so therapeutic and healing. And I wanted something that my friends, when they come to all my concerts, because they're so dedicated, could just like dance to and sing along with me. It was very inspired by Chapel Roan.
Okay.
Yeah.
Would you say that your friends inspire a lot of your music taste, or that come from your upbringing? What kind of got you into this sort of sound that you've leaned into now?
Yeah, I definitely think it was a little bit of my upbringing. So my mom has always listened to like alt rock. I remember that song, like "Somebody That You Used to Know."
It's
like
Goaty, somebody that we used to know. Where is he at? We have no idea
what he's doing. Heard that one song, never heard from him again. Unless you were my mom, I feel like my mom might still know what's going on. But anyways,
she's keeping up to date with Goaty.
Yeah, is it Goaty or Gautier?
I have no idea.
I think it's Gautier.
Okay, it's Gautier. I'm at a radio station. I should be knowing these things.
No, it's like, okay. It's okay. Nobody actually.
We don't
knows.
Even know, because he just showed up. Was it a fever dream? I don't even remember.
I don't remember.
He was here and then he was gone.
I remember how weird the music video was.
Oh yeah. Yo. All the colors.
This is giving two girls with ADHD.
Yeah. Sorry. Let's bring this back to what we're talking about. Mm-hmm, so your taste came from alt rock from your mother.
Yeah. My mom. And then I think like when I was in high school, I was in the jazz band, and I started listening to a lot of jazz, and I was like, Take Five, Misty, like all of these classic standards. And then I kind of feel like I morphed into both of them, and I started listening to, like, I just like went on YouTube holes in high school, like 11 and 12 especially, and I would just like look for really, really cool arrangements of songs. Like my favorite thing was covers that were completely different. Like you would hear a Weezer cover and it was like a jazz Weezer cover, and I was like, this is
my
that. Right?
It's like the reggae covers.
Yeah, they're so good. So anyways, I just was like listening to that a bunch, and I don't know, I just kind of have, like, I just want something that, like, I can groove to. And I find that that's, like, kind of more in that R&B section. But I also want to be able to, like, dance with my friends, which I find is a little bit more rock. So I try to bring those two together.
So it's just, like, a nice blend of everything all together.
Yeah. And then I also find that I have a very, like, I liked having a little rasp in my voice, a little, like, rah,
yes,
growl.
Definitely heard that. Yeah. Definitely heard that in your song. So coming up, we're about to hear another one from you. Mm-hmm. We're going into acoustic now.
Mm-hmm.
So can you tell me a little bit about the song before we play it? Maybe start with what's it called. Does this one have a name? Or
yes, it does. Okay. So this one is called Fallen. And this was about somebody who, like, totally led me on. And it was, like, it was for months. And I just, like, felt so insecure after it. And I hated the way that I felt. And it's actually supposed to be, like, it's a little bit of, like, a... like two sides of the same coin with, like, For the Girlies and Fallen, I feel like. Because Fallen is, like, me after a, like, kind of a breakup situation, and I'm just so down on myself. And I just, like, I'm just so insecure. And then in For the Girlies, I'm like, no, this person isn't going to, like, allow, like, I'm not going to let this person ruin my day.
It would make a great, like, EP.
Yeah.
To have.
That's what I'm going for.
Yes. Yes. We'll get into that.
Yeah.
So, Fallen, you're about to hear from Sadie McFadden, 101.9 FM. Stay tuned, and we will be right back. Yeah.
searching for some higher feeling, but we don't work, and I don't believe in God. So baptize me anew to wash out all my thoughts on you. I must be popping for you. Don't know who you are. No clue. You're breaking your tick, breaking your tick, breaking your tick, breaking your tick. Don't know what to do, but I'm glad it's with you. My heart, hope to die. I'll never ever bend this shop. Maybe you're just a fantasy or a casualty of virtual reality. Saying you can't be what I want, so I leave my emotions to haunt. Show you that it's easy to be with me, 'cause I'm fighting for you. Don't know who you are, no clue. You're breaking your tick, breaking your tick, breaking your tick, breaking your tick. Don't know what to do, but I'm glad it's with you. If you even like me, and imagine my greatest fear, it's like being unlovable, never enough, and I'll go to the gym, and I'll do some more tucks before another one leaves. Breaking your dick, breaking your dick, breaking your dick. Don't know what to do since you sent the coup. Falling for you, you were never falling for me too. Don't know what to do, 'cause I'm
back with 101.9 FM CFRC. My name is Paige. I'm hosting here today. You just listened to Sadie McFadden, who's joining me today, talking a little bit about her music and her musical journey. So we just heard Fallen. And so now I hear that you have these shows coming up. So super excited. So it's Saturday, I believe. Friday?
There's so many.
Okay, so I had on the station earlier this earlier, but we have Sleepy Kicks and Steel Cut Oats coming all the way from Halifax, who are going to be there, and then yourself and Mobius Trip. So are you excited for that show at all?
Yes.
Excited to have. That's four different. If you like variety, check out that show at the Mansion.
Yeah, so it's at the Mansion this Friday, and I'm honestly really looking forward to it because I have never met these people, like Sleepy Kicks, and I haven't met Steel Cut Oats, but I really like their music, and I'm always happy to share the stage with women because a lot of times I don't don't get that opportunity. And so whenever I do, I love to take it. So I'm really excited about that show. And you can buy your tickets on Eventbrite, everybody. Plug, plug, plug.
Yes, go to Eventbrite, everybody. Or just check out the mansion. I'm sure you have a way to get them.
Tickets at the door, too. Yeah. $15. And you know what? Like, I know $15 sounds like it's a lot, but when you divide it between the 20 people there that are on stage, like, we're all getting less than a buck, right?
No, totally.
So anyways, yeah. So I'm really excited for that one. I also have another show on July 5th at the mansion. I have, I should say these in order. Okay. So I have this upcoming Friday is at the mansion, and that's with Steel Cut Oats and with Sleepy Kicks and with Mobius Trip. And then actually on July 1st, I have a gig at Juniper Cafe. And then at July 5th, I have a gig at the Toucan with a full band, which I'm really excited for because we're going to do a Chapel Roan cover.
Oh, that's so exciting. And, that's really exciting.
And maybe like a little espresso as well, like a little espresso cover.
Yeah, bringing her out here.
Yeah.
Do you have the outfits like Sabrina?
No. I wish.
Could.
I could.
You could.
I could, but here's the hot take. She gets all of that, like, I just know she has, like, a seamstress who does every single
thing. Oh, 100%.
I can't. 100%. If I was rich, I'm sure she's not rich. If I had the backing that she has,
yes,
I absolutely would do it. I would love to go up there and just be like sparkling, but I'm not big enough for that yet. Like maybe in like 5 to 10 years.
So, to kind of guide us back into, like, it will be soon for you. So what's coming up next for Sadie McFadden? Like, are you writing? Are you doing an EP? Are you joining a band? Let's hear what the new, what's the next steps? Or are you okay with, like, where wherever you are and just enjoying the summer? Because I know that's a thing people do as well.
So right now, in the month of August, I'm actually going to be going on tour across Ontario.
So exciting.
Which I'm really excited for. And I'm also, throughout that time period, I'm also going to be working on recording some singles. And I'll be doing that at Port William Sound, which is going to be really fun. Huge shout out to Jonas Bonita and everything that he has been doing with me. He's such a great person to be working with. But yeah, that's pretty much, honestly, it's tour. Like, tour has been what I've been
working on. Which is so exciting, though. That has a lot, there's a lot riding on that.
Yeah, I'm really excited because I'm going to be playing in Hamilton and Toronto, and I'm from Hamilton, and I have so many friends in Toronto. And so far, we are on track to be selling out both venues, so I'm really excited for that.
So check out the shows then, everybody. Mm-hmm. We want more sold out shows coming from Sadie McFadden.
Yes.
So we're kind of coming to the end of our interview here, and I want to hear about this last song because you were telling me that it's very emotional and powerful to you. So as much as you are willing to share here on air about the process of writing that song and everything that went into it.
Yeah, so my dear friend and music mentor, her name is Suzanne Pasternak, and she has been a huge role model for me as a young woman in the music scene. It's a lot of times it's really difficult because you don't have the proper representation, and you really don't, like, it's just so frustrating to see, like, the boys club that is the music scene a lot of times. And it is something that is prominent in Kingston. And so she was really, like, the person who said to me, like, start valuing yourself, start valuing your time, and make sure, like, you're getting paid for the things that you're doing. Because, like, unfortunately in this world, that is what, that's how people show you if you matter to them in the business, right? So like, try to be compensated. Like, it's okay if somebody can't pay you like $1 million, like, obviously, but and can't pay you super well, but like, you need to get, like, you cannot be getting paid like $10 for a gig. Like, you can't be getting paid with exposure. You deserve to be paid well. And then one day, she had been getting sick. And one day I found out that she passed away. It's kind of, this song is just like my therapy after that. I was really upset and I was crying. I just, like, tuned my guitar the way she would have tuned it. She loved open detuning. And then, yeah, I just kind of was really honest about it, and I didn't really try to make it into anything. I just was, just as authentic as I possibly could be when I was writing that. And I do think it is probably the saddest song I've ever written, but very honest song as well.
Well, I appreciate you saying that to me now, mm-hmm. because it can be hard to open up a lot about songs, especially about things that are so deep and meaningful to you. But I think for everybody listening, the song is beautiful. So
thank you.
What's the name of it for our listeners? You can let them know.
Yeah. So the name of the song is Grief, and it's about Suzanne Pasternak.
And it's beautiful. So everyone stay tuned in. This is the end of Live Sessions with Sadie McFadden. I'm your host. Thank you so much for being here today and just Thanks. Playing and speaking and just being real with us here, because we love that. So everybody, this was your Live Sessions with 101.9 FM. Thank you so much and see ya.
everybody. It's Sadie McFadden, and you're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM.
On CFRC 101.9 FM, every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 p.m., you'll hear Finding a Voice. My name is Bruce, host of that poetry-focused spoken word program. On it, you'll hear local readings and events, occasionally telephone interviews across Canada, and always a touch of music. Again, Finding a Voice, here every Friday from 4 to 6 p.m. Check it out. Hope to catch you there.
Today on Wings, Child Care in Kenya, a report by Diana Wanyonyi.
Care is work.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings.
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
At Kisumu Ndogo Slums in Mombasa County. Here, I have come to meet Edel Wafula, a mother and also a caregiver for children below the age of 4 years who are brought to her house daily by parents who go to work. It's 7 in the morning. I find her washing utensils outside her one-bedroom house. Then she cooks rice and fries some fish. This, she tells me, it's lunch for her 2 children. Edel tells me that her daycare opens at 8:30 in the morning from Monday to Saturday.
Mimi kweli kazi yangu ilikuwa kunikulea watoto. Watoto wananitaga tu mama mlezi. Wakati wa mpurupuko ukitoka, nilikuwa na watoto tu 3. Yeah. Lakini mbeleni nilikuwa na watoto kama 6, 7. Lakini sasa kiwango kile walipofika cha kuenda shule, wakaenda shule.
My work is to take care of the children. Children just call me mama. Mama who take care of them. During COVID-19 outbreak, I had only 3 babies whom I was taking care of. But before COVID-19, I had between 6 to 7 children whom I was taking care of. But they grew fast and they were taken to school. So it was no longer my responsibility. I started afresh again.
Waweze kuongea wakitaka kuenda choo. Ya ndo wakienda shule, wasipatie walimu shida. Na saa nyingine pia kucheza nao na wapatia kama toys. Wale ambao hawajui bado ndo wanajifunza kukaa ama kutembea. Kuna baby walker. Mwingine nampatia.
I usually take care of children under the age of 4. So that when they reach 4 years, I usually tell parents to take them to school because I don't want any problem with the government. When they come here, I teach them how to go to the toilet and how to speak if they feel pressed. So that when they start going to school, they will not give teachers problem. And also, I have toys here. I usually play games with them. I also give the small ones baby rocker. What motivated me to start this caregiving is because one of my friends died while she was giving birth, and I requested the family to give me that baby so that I can take care of the baby. And that's how I felt like, yes, I have a calling in taking care of others. She's now 4 years. I charge 100 shillings per day for every kid who I take care of. They come with their food. And I'm the only caregiver here. When parents bring their children, they also carry food along with them.
Mtoto wa kwa siku tulikuwa tunalipana 100. Mlezi wa ni mimi. Chakula wazazi wanaleta.
That was Edel Wafula, a mother and a caregiver for children below the age of 4 years. She spoke to me, Diana Wanyonyi, at Kisumu Ndogo Slums in Mombasa. Lucy Minayo is an advocate and executive director of Nature First, a global founder and capacity builder focused on building systems that support home-based childcare providers. After attending her media training on reporting about childcare in Mombasa, I asked her for an interview.
Nature First is a global funder and capacity builder that was established in 2022 with the sole purpose of building support for home-based childcare providers. It's estimated in Kenya, in the informal settlements, that about 60 to 80% of children in those settings are taken care of in their homes by women who open up their homes to provide this first service at a minimal fee. Mm-hmm. Though we are global, we started our operations in Kenya, and we are working in three counties, Mumbai, Mombasa, Kisumu, and Murang'a.
Why these three counties?
The three counties, for various reasons, Kisumu and Mombasa, because Kisumu has a large peri-urban population with corresponding childcare needs. Mm-hmm. Mombasa has a large workers that are not living in Mombasa coming from other counties, and there's a huge care burden in Mombasa. And then in Murang'a, while it is a rural county, it has some economic activities that make it peri-urban, like the flower farming, the agribusiness that's happening with Kakuzi and the Del Monte, etc. We looked at the population dynamics and established the care needs in those dynamics, and we also were looking at counties where there's minimal work care interventions going on, counties where we could make a difference by supporting county governments and communities to design solutions for the challenges they are facing.
You are listening to Wings. The organization is in how many countries in Africa?
So far, we are just in Kenya. We are testing these learning interventions in Kenya, and then hopefully we will expand to other parts of the world.
And how is the reception in Kenya?
The reception has been quite good. Actually, when I started this work in 2022, county governments did not quite understand who a home-based childcare provider was or is. And in fact, some of them would term these women as illegal. So when we started the work and we started showing them what is going on, some studies had been done, and we brought those studies into the rooms with the government, that's when they realized, oh, we have a huge working population in the informal settlements that are helping us to do our job. So right now, we are collaborating with those three counties to think through policy solutions and solutions to make that service affordable, accessible, and of good quality.
What is caregiving?
So when we talk about care, we are talking about services that are provided to us, sometimes to individuals, and these are services that support the economy of the country, but they are invisible. They are provided in two formats. There's paid care, so the care like what is happening in hospitals, etc. And then there's unpaid care and domestic work that happens in domestic situations. So that really is the definition of care, and the type of care workers that we are working with. Our focus is these women that are providing care at little to no fee, because they could fall within the category of unpaid care or lowly paid care workers. And what we are doing is really bringing dignity to this work, visibility, so that people understand this work. And the definition of a home-based provider is just a woman that is providing care out of their home, their personal home, and they provide to a group of children at a fee or sometimes no fee. And this care can also be provided. It's not just these women, but we also have it in the format of our grandmothers, family, friends, and neighbors. Yeah.
Have Kenyans understood this?
Kenyans understand it. Actually, when we were having the conversation yesterday with the journalists, this is care. Everyone knows this is care. It's just that we are now beginning to understand care as it's work. It's not a voluntary thing. It's not, people are not idle. And then they decide we'll provide care. No, people are actually doing it as a means of earning an income. And there are several inputs that should be made so that the work becomes of good quality. So things like training, etc., that needs to happen so that these care providers, their skills are enhanced. So they don't just do minding of children, they also provide early learning opportunities to the children, among others. Yeah.
What came out strongly yesterday in your presentation?
So yesterday we were making the connection between care work and the time use survey that was launched by Kenya last year. And what came out strongly was just this understanding of the social dynamics in our societies that define our care infrastructure. And those are things like the demographic of the country. So who is it that is accessing care in Kenya or in Africa? Majority of the people that are accessing care are the children, below, particularly below age 3, and then actually below age 8, and then we have elderly people. But then in Africa, we also have a huge disease burden. So those are also people who access care. And then in terms of who is providing care, it's mostly women. We also looked at cultural factors that inform care, and the reason why we have more women providing care in Africa and even in Kenya is really because our culture, you know, defines, has kind of arranged, organized us in such a way that a lot of these jobs that are not seen as jobs are performed by women. We also looked at the policies and the implications of policies on the care infrastructure. So care is not just about leave, you know, the employment, the employed. It's also about the infrastructure. It's what we were talking about today, markets. How are societies supporting informal workers to meet the care needs of their families? So we looked at the comprehensiveness of the policies that are needed to make care, to build infrastructure that is responding to the needs of Kenyans, of Africans. And then we also looked at, now we were connecting, the valuing, what are the things that need to happen so that care work is valued through the 5R principles: recognize, reduce, redistribute, reward, and represent. Yeah, so we were looking at it through that five principle lens, so that we, you know, as the journalists report on this issue, they are looking at the comprehensiveness of the issue. They're bringing attention to the gaps in care, and sensitizing the public about care. So recognition is about making people understand that this is work. Care is work. And I want to equate it to things like our community health workers. When community health work, initially before these guys were called community health workers, they used to be called volunteers. And there was a connotation there that they are not quite doing work, you know. So recognition is bringing some dignity to the work and acknowledging that it is actually work. Then the second is reducing it, and reducing means that considering the care burden and identifying the interventions that are needed to lessen that burden. And those interventions could be things like even sharing that care burden in the home, and so on and so forth. Redistribution includes the infrastructure, basically spreading the care burden, so it's not sitting within the home and not being performed by the woman only. And redistribution includes this infrastructure that is required so that the care work is performed across a set of institutions and not left to the home as a burden that is borne by the families. Then rewarding it is just compensating it. I talked about how home-based childcare providers receive very little money for their work. We've encountered situations where women are actually earning something like 20 shillings, which is it's below 50 US cents. And The much I've heard about is something like 200 shillings. So it's defining the value for that work and then allocating adequate resources so that people earn a living wage from that work. And then representation is really recognizing, supporting the care providers to organize, to advocate for their issues, to engage, to sit in policy conversations, because the wearer of the shoe is the one that really knows where it pinches.
Lucy Minayo is an advocate and executive director of Nature First, a global founder and capacity builder focused on building systems that support home-based childcare providers, discussing current practices and goals for childcare in Kenya. She talked to me, Diana Wanyonyi, in Mombasa. Do we have enough care centers here in Kenya?
That's a really good question. That care is provided. So when we talk about childcare, it's provided to through two primary mechanisms. One is centers, childcare centers, and then the second is in the home. And in the home, there are two formats. Eh? It's either a nanny, somebody providing care out of the house of the child, or care provided out of the house of the provider. So in Kenya, the most dominant format, the one that most people know, actually in Africa, is the home-based version of care. So people either have a nanny or they take their child to some house belonging to some lady or man to take care of their children.
You are listening to Wings.
Child care centers are fairly new in our context. They are particularly for children that are aged 0 to 3. The assumption is these children are taken care of at home by their parents or by somebody that's being paid to do that work. There's actually a gap in terms of care centers for children aged 0 to 3. But we are seeing governments and private sector and social entrepreneurs like Kidogo, Tiny Totos and others beginning to support women to set up child care centers in their communities. We are seeing government as well beginning to build care facilities in markets. So if you county government of I think it's Kirinyaga has a child care center in the markets, and Busia, and you know, among others.
Makueni.
So we are Makueni among Nakuru. Others. Yes, Nakuru, yeah.
Can you talk about Children Acts and the care reforms that are coming through, and what will happen if all these children homes are no longer there?
Mm. Yeah. Okay, so the Children Act has pushed us towards something that I think is important, deinstitutionalization of care. So moving the care of children away from institutions to the families. And what is happening right now in the Ministry of Labor and Social Protection is that in 2022 or 2023, the government launched care reforms, national care reforms, which are really meant to phase out charitable care institutions. This is a global issue. It's not limited to Africa or Kenya. Charitable children's institutions and to move children back to homes. Now, that's a good thing. It's noble. However, it might create a gap or increase the care burden for families and for communities. And so what needs to be thought through is what's the support mechanisms that are needed. This actually the care reforms will happen over a period of 10 years. So my assumption is that the government has given itself 10 years to reform care and to kind of sensitize the public about the importance of things like fostering, adoption, among others, because those are the mechanisms through which children will come back to their homes, and reintegration, family reintegration, among others. But I think there will still be gaps, particularly for orphans or children who have no guardians, and we need to think critically about, or even needs care needs for when the people that adopt or foster these children, there will be care needs, as in they will still be going on with their lives, like going to work, among others. So there will be support required for these people to be able to take care of additional children without interrupting their daily lives. So in our conversation yesterday, we noted the importance of all these efforts, reforms, reading into each other. So as we work on child care systems, and this is not children in need of care and protection, this is children aged 0 to 3 who require care, because to release their parents or guardians to do other things, distinguished from children in need of care and protection who are in charitable care institutions. Mm-hmm. So all these reforms need to read into each other, and any gaps identified and taken into consideration as we build our national child care system in this country.
Yeah. Yeah. What are some of the challenges are there for organizing care?
I think the biggest challenge in this country is that we are yet to really, we don't have a national child care policy, and we do not have a national child care system. What we have are private attempts to create private solutions to what is actually a public problem. So we don't have a national child care system that is publicly financed and publicly supported. That's one. So it makes things difficult. So when counties are setting up childcare systems, they are setting up these variations. If you go to Turkana County, they have their own understanding of care, Mombasa, etc. So that care system is going to help us. If we enact it, it will help us to standardize things and to ensure universal access. And importantly, recognize the roles and responsibilities of government and the different players in the field. So that's one. Two, is just a question of quality. So a lot of people get into this business because it's easy to set up. You actually just need your house and demonstrate capacity to take care of children. And the assumption is if you have children, you have demonstrated capacity to take care of children, yeah? But that's not necessarily the case. Eh? So the question of quality is critical. And within quality, there are things like training, there are things like mentorship, coaching, among others. And these are some of the things that Nurture First, the organization that I spoke about, is working on. Organizations like Kidogo, Uthabiti, and Tiny Totos, Toto Care, among others, are trying to resolve that situation. And then 3 for me, I think, is just the question of recognition of this work. So it's these mamas provide care. Yani, they are on their own. They are on their own, and the government will only interact with them when a problem has occurred. So, we cannot deliver. So they need support. So, and the support will come once these mamas are recognized, and it's connected to the point I made about a national care system. Yeah.
Yeah. Yesterday you spoke about the slum home-based care providers and mm-hmm. how the government have neglected them, mm-hmm. and yet they're very important. Please, can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, so the point I made was that these mamas, particularly in the informal, that is the primary form of provision of childcare. But they operate, first of all, they are not making a living wage, which means they can't even meet registration requirements under any regime, whether you want them to register as a business or to register as a business name or whatever it is, an association.
Or even association or enterprise.
Exactly. So they will operate underground. They will operate out of the boundaries of the administration, which is I understand them. But it's something that the government needs to think about, mm-hmm. how to... So when counties set up these laws, I think one of the things that that should happen within those laws is to recognize different forms of childcare. Like, childcare is not just provided in a childcare center. It's not just an ECD provider who can provide care. So these mamas that have been providing care, part of their recognition could be acknowledging that they've been providing care. So that's something the government calls recognition of prior learning, and then identifying what are their capacity needs, supporting them based on those capacity needs so they can provide quality services to the children.
Is the government aware of this initiative? Do you think it will be tabled in the parliament so that it can become an act for every county to have a similar, or what do you think?
I know people are working with the national government. The County of Council of Governors is on this issue, very well versed and leading some efforts towards basically a national standard. But counties are well seized. There are many, if not all, counties have started considering. Some already have laws on childcare, policies on childcare. Mm-hmm. So this is an issue that the government is willing, and in discussions that partners are having with governments, the reception is very good. So I know that it's an issue that governments are paying attention to, our county governments are paying attention to.
Yeah. You've just ended some training with journalists. Why do you think journalists are very important stakeholders in this initiative?
They play the important role of informing us about things that are happening in the community. And now that the Kenya Time Use Survey has been launched, they have the power of the microphone and the medium camera. They are using, camera and, you know, the pen, so as to be able to report on this issue in a very accurate manner, but also to bring visibility to this issue and to sensitize the public about this issue, so that we begin building understanding of care and building communities that appreciate care workers and reward those care workers. Childcare is the emergency crisis of our times, and it's unfortunate that it's coming in the midst of other crises like climate. We are just coming off a pandemic. We are beginning to recover from the pandemic, among other things. There are several gaps in the way care is delivered in our countries, in our continent, and we need to begin conversations about shifting public systems to provide coverage to childcare and other care needs. We have elder care, we have disability care, we have sickly, etc. So we have to have very, very candid, robust conversations with our governments about how we shift the public system to support the care needs, the growing care needs of our population. And it's a good thing that we started the Time Use Survey and make the connections there, but governments have to invest in public systems, because that is the way that we will make care accessible, we'll make it affordable, we'll make it universally accessible, affordable, and of good quality. Scandinavian countries have good examples that we can follow, but if we look at Africa, South Africa, the childcare advocates in South Africa got a very good win when the government actually put in 10 million significant funding, social protection, to support childcare needs. So I think South Africa would be a good country to look at, and maybe Rwanda. Rwanda also has some good learnings. And Ethiopia, actually the city of Addis, the mayor has put in some significant money to support childcare needs.
That was Lucy Minayo, an advocate and executive director of Nature First, a global founder and capacity builder focused on building systems that support home-based childcare providers. In Mombasa, I am Diana Wanyonyi for Wings.
Thanks to All Wings supporters, including your community radio stations, Suzette Cullen and Genevieve Vaughn, whose events can be found through the website maternalgifteconomymovement.org. That's all one word, maternalgifteconomymovement.org. The Wings sound logo is from Libana's album, A Circle is Cast. I'm Wings series producer Frieda Worden. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.
It is 12 p.m. on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Coming up next is Democracy Now! Views expressed in this syndicated program are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the views or positions of CFRC 101.9 FM, Radio Queen's University.
I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! This is CFRC 101.9 FM, www.cfrc.ca, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario.
On Saturday, September